It's about time to get started. Our speaker tonight is Bill Brandsetter from Marion, Illinois. He's here by himself. He says his wife couldn't make it. She was sorry, and she wished she could. He's going to be speaking us tonight on the Syrophoenician woman. Is that right? And I don't want to take up any more of his time, so I'll just let him go.
Did I get it? Good evening. Good to see everybody here this evening. Greetings from the hub of the universe. That's what our mayor said at one time, that was the longest serving mayor in Illinois history, and he called it the hub of the universe. And I learned a long time ago, you don't argue with Bob Butler. So if he said it was the hub of the universe, but greetings. And greetings from Cubs country, my house. If you're a Cubs fan, we won today, 10-2. If you're a Cardinals fan, we won today, 10-2. It is great to see you. Thank you for being here. It's good to be back with people that I know, Jim and Donna and Adam and Leah, Davis Pruitt and Charles Turok and others that I've known for quite a few years. I was wondering if you were here because I was going to tell about that Cubs score and I was hoping you were here. We're glad that you're here. We're going to talk tonight about a Syrophoenician woman and her bold faith. We're going to talk about her, the area that she was from. And as we do this, we're going to talk about our faith. Our faith. You know, John said, this is the victory that overcomes the world, our faith, 1 John 5:4. So we need to know something about our faith. Let me get my clicker. You all have insurance, don't you? Okay. Let's begin with a couple of questions, okay? Very personal questions. Number one, who are you? Pretty simple question. Who are you? The woman we're looking at tonight is identified in a variety of ways, and all of those ways are correct. If you were to ask somebody here tonight, who is he? Up there speaking, some people would say, I don't know. If you ask Jim Fawn, Jim would say, I don't know. No, Jim knows who I am. If you ask Drew that just introduced me, he'd say, Bill Brandstetter from Marion, Illinois. And he's right. If you ask three of my grandchildren on Buckner Lane who I am, they'd say, Pawpaw. And they'd be right. I have some other grandchildren that call me Grandpa. We had a little problem one time. The ones that called me Grandpa were talking to the ones that called me Pawpaw. And the ones that called me Pawpaw came up and said, are you Grandpa? But I'm all of that. Now, if you go to Marion, Illinois and ask some people who I am, the Marion, Illinois congregation would say, that's our preacher. If you go to the county clerk, she'd say, that's one of our election judges. If you go to the assisted living facility, they'd say, that's the preacher that comes out here every Tuesday. And every one of them would be correct. In our text, and we'll be looking at Matthew chapter 15 and Mark chapter 7, Matthew says in Matthew 5 verse 22, a woman of Canaan came from that region. That's all Matthew says. In Mark 7, Mark says she's Syrophoenician and she's a Gentile. Both are right. But the question who you are depends on who you ask. Sometimes the area that you live in or where you work. And the next question I want to ask you is, how would you rate your faith? How would you rate your faith? Did you know the Bible sometimes rates people's faith? As a matter of fact, this section of Matthew, in Matthew 14 and Matthew 15, we have faith rated twice. For example, in Matthew 14, 31, when Peter starts to walk in the water, and then he begins to sink, and Jesus says in Matthew 14, 31, O you of little faith, why did you doubt? And then here, we have faith rated again in Matthew 15, verse 28, great is your faith. Now, if you had to rate your faith, where would it be? Somewhere between little and great, or maybe great or maybe little? Well, we're going to learn later on that Faith is described in a number of ways throughout Scripture. And how do we measure faith? See, Jesus is going to measure this woman's faith. How do we measure it? Well, I attend 90% of the services, so I must be faithful. Is that how we rate faith? Or, well, you know, I live a pretty faithful Christian life the best I can, so I must be one of great faith. How do we rate it? And how would God rate your faith? How would God? That's probably even a more important question. How would God rate it? Jesus said of this woman, great is your faith. Now, back in Matthew chapter 8, he talks about a centurion. And he said he had great faith such that Jesus had not even seen in Israel. That's pretty good faith. You got a text that said that?
Yeah.
Wow, technology. Can you all hear me and see me? Okay. Now they can. Okay. So how is your faith? How would you rate your faith? And more importantly, how would God rate your faith? Okay, let's talk about this woman for a little bit. She is called by Matthew a woman of Canaan. And in Mark chapter 7, she's called a Greek or a Gentile. The word Gentile can also be translated nations or nation. Anyone that wasn't of Israel was a Greek or a Gentile. Now to you and I, that may not mean a whole lot. But Gentiles were described by Jews as dogs. And consider the fact that Matthew wrote to Jews. About a Jew. And he wanted them to see that Jesus was the Messiah. And he was the King. And they denied that. And so here you have a Gentile woman. Now think about the implications of this. A Gentile woman who is from an area, she's a heathen because she's a Canaanite. They worshiped foreign gods, Baal and Ashtaroth. So she's a pagan worshiper. And Jesus says she has great faith. By the way, Matthew says she's from Canaan, and Mark doesn't say anything about that. So Matthew's message to the Jews is, here is a woman who is a pagan worshiper, and look at her faith. How should their faith be? She comes to Jesus and says, have mercy on me, O Lord, Son of David. My daughter is severely demon-possessed. That's New King James. So she's presented as a mother suffering unspeakable grief because of some incurable demonic influence in her daughter. This is one of two occasions when Jesus heals what I call by remote control. That is, he heals and he doesn't have to go anywhere to do it. He's in one location, the daughter's in the other, and he's going to heal her. She's also a very determined woman. And one of the things about our faith is we need to have determined faith. Sometimes we begin down the road to Christianity and difficult times come and we stop. Or we fall. Or we falter. Or we fail. Or somebody will throw up a roadblock and will say, I'm not going any further. This woman had a couple of things, more than that, three or four things that were roadblocks. Number one, she was a Gentile. Number two, sorry ladies, but she was a woman. And in Jewish culture, women weren't considered very high on the totem pole. Matter of fact, a Jewish woman was not supposed to speak to a man other than her husband in public. That's why in the Samaritan woman at the well is so unique that Jesus talks to her. Number four, she was a pagan worshiper. She didn't worship God. She was a pagan worshiper. She was a Canaanite. All these things against her, but that didn't stop her from going to Jesus and saying, help my daughter. Now, some of us might think, well, she's motivated because of her daughter. Could be. Let's look at some other things. The region she's from is from Sidon, Tyre, Phoenicia, Syria, up in that area. Notice Beirut. That area is modern-day Lebanon. Try to back this thing up. Can I back it up? Oh, yeah. H. Leo Bowles said in his commentary in Matthew that this was the only time that we have where Jesus ventured outside of Palestine during his ministry. If that's so, and I believe it is, that's very interesting because he goes up into an area that is not very highly regarded, Phoenicia and Tyre and Sidon. She was Syrophoenician by birth, Mark says. That is, her race, her nation, was by birth. Do you know sometimes a person's faith can come from where they're born? A person's faith can come by the family in which they live. Back in the earlier in Matthew 15, and you all know verse 8 and 9, these people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Most of us know verse 9, in vain do they worship me, teaching as doctrines and commandments of men. You all know that. The religious faith of the people in Matthew 15:8 came from tradition. What their family said. I want you to keep in mind verse 8, though, because there's something that's going to go on with this Syrophoenician woman that I think is connected to verse 8. These people draw near to me with their mouth, and they honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. Okay. It's significant, again, that she was a Canaanite and a Gentile. Being a Canaanite, she was the descendant of Noah's son Ham. Remember, there was a curse that had been pronounced on Ham, and the Canaanites were looked down upon by the Jews as unworthy of God's blessing. So the region we are from sometimes makes a difference in what other people think about us. Did you know that? The region, where you're from, makes a difference. I remember when I was in Vienna, and I was from Northern Illinois. I was an outsider. Most of my adult life and all of my married life, well, just about all of my married life, has been spent in Southern Illinois. But I'm still an outsider because I was born up in Cubs country, up around Peoria. I said Cubs again, didn't I? Had to throw that in. And I was born up in Northern Illinois. And I found out in Vienna that anybody running for public office in Vienna, if you're not from Southern Illinois, you probably won't get elected. And the same with Marion. Now, this text says she was a Syrophoenician by birth. She wasn't just a resident of Syrophoenicia. She was born there. So whatever that culture was like, which was not good, Tyre and Sidon was there, remember? Jesus on one occasion said it'd be more tolerable for Tyre and Sidon judgment than it would for some of the Israelites or the Jews he was talking to. The area that they was from was known for carnality, for corruption, and that's where this lady's from. So she's from that area, born there. Immediately, perhaps, there was some kind of a stigma attached to her. As a matter of fact, Jesus, in verse 23 of Matthew 15, when she said, "My daughter is severely demon-possessed," he answered her not a word, and his disciples said, "Send her away, for she cries after us." Some Bible commentators believe the reason they said send her away is because she's a Canaanite, she's a Gentile, could be because she's from Syrophoenicia, could be because she's a woman. All those things may have been the reason the disciples said send her away. But the region we're from sometimes makes a big difference in who others think we are and can often determine something about our faith. In Acts chapter 11, we read about those that were scattered after persecution that arose over Stephen as far as Phoenicia, Cyprus, Antioch, preaching the word to no one but the Jews only. And apparently there was a congregation in Phoenicia being sent on their way by the church. They passed through Phoenicia and Samaria, describing the conversion of the Gentiles, and they caused great joy to all the brethren, perhaps brethren in Phoenicia too, I don't know. But nonetheless, Paul, in one of his missionary journeys, went through Phoenicia. Again, the significance of being from the reach of Tyre and Sidon is important. Again, remember Matthew 11:20? Jesus said it would be more tolerable for those two cities of judgment than the cities of Israel who rejected their Messiah. So Tyre and Sidon in the province of Phoenicia are linked to carnality and corruption. Tyre today is modern-day Lebanon. Sidon is called Saida. You know, you're familiar with Lebanon, and so forth and so on. Burton Kaufman says this about the Phoenicians, and I find this interesting. Despite their wickedness, their achievements were considerable. They're said to have invented the alphabet, developed the art of navigation to the point which enabled them to circumvent Africa in the 7th century B.C., and to have been skilled manufacturers of metal objects, textile fabrics, purple dye made from seashells. Hiram, the king of Tyre, aided Solomon in the building of the temple. So she was, reviewing, not from the nation of Israel, a woman, a Gentile. As a Canaanite, she didn't worship God. And this may have been while the disciples sent her away. Now, right there, there's three or four obstacles to this woman's faith. She could have come to Jesus, and as soon as he said, "I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel," she could have thrown up her hands and said, "Wait a minute. I'm not of the lost sheep of Israel. I'm not of Israel at all. I have no connection to Israel. The place I'm from is not right. My religion's not right. I don't worship the right God. That's it. I give up." She didn't. She kept going. By the way, one commentator I read, and I don't remember who it was, said that verse 24 may have been directed at the disciples, not her. Something to think about. So we have her region, then her request. Look at her request. It's brief, but explicit. "Have mercy on me, my daughter is severely demon-possessed." That's her request. Now Mark's account has it a little bit different. She came and fell at his feet. And it just says, "The woman whose young daughter had an unclean spirit heard about him, and she came and fell at his feet." So, unclean spirit, demon-possessed. But she recognized something about Jesus. And I want you to just look for me just a minute at how she addressed him. "Oh, Lord, Son of David." Does that strike you as interesting? She was a pagan worshiper. She was from Canaan, a Canaanite woman. She's from an area known for its carnality and its corruption. But how does she address him? Lord. Every time she says something to him in Matthew 15, she calls him Lord. Master. And the first thing she says is, "Son of David." I'm getting ahead of my slide. Notice, "Have mercy on me." She was in dire need, dependent upon Jesus as the only one who could do for her what she needed. Notice her recognition. "Son of David." She recognized him as the Messiah. Have you ever read the genealogy in Matthew chapter 1? I sometimes preach a sermon called "The Chapter Nobody Reads." Because the first 17 verses of Matthew chapter 1, most people don't begin there. They begin at the birth of Jesus in verse 18. But let me have you do something. Anybody, Adam or anybody, read Matthew 1:1. Let's see what it says. I want you to see what the first thing out of the gate Matthew says is. Did you hear what he said? Did he say the son of Abraham, the son of David? How did he say it? The son of David, the son of Abraham. Why did he list David first? Didn't Abraham come before David? Because to say he's the son of David means he's the Messiah. Then if you look at those other 17 verses, you find a whole bunch of the kings of Judah listed from verses 1 through 17 to show that Jesus came through a royal line, and he was the king. He is the Messiah. He's the Christ. So here you have, think of the irony of this. You have a Canaanite woman who's a Gentile, who's from an area known for its wickedness, and what she says, something some of the Jews may or may not have accepted. He is the Messiah, Son of David. Now, earlier I said, to remember Matthew 15:8. Did she draw near to him with her lips, but her heart was really far from him? Is that why she said that? Was she just buttering him up? Was she just coming to say that in order to get a favor of him, heal my demon-possessed daughter? Verse 23 presents something interesting to us. Notice my daughter's severely demon-possessed. By her words, we learn her faith, her humility, her adoration. But was she there to have her daughter healed, or was there more to it? Her heart was on display in the text. Again, we compare it to the heart of the scribes and Pharisees. And she called Jesus Lord three times. Three times. Every time she addressed him. Verse 22, O Lord, heal my daughter. Verse 25, Lord, help me. Verse 27, yes, Lord. Every time she called him Lord. Jesus said to the Jews, why do you call me Lord, Lord, but don't do the things which I say? They honored him with their lips, but their hearts were far from him. Again, H. Leo Bowell says that when she called him the Son of David, she confessed him as Messiah. So her repulse, the disciples said, send her away. Send her away. Jesus said, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to little dogs. In studying for this lesson, you'd be surprised as to the number of comments and commentaries and statements about what this verse means. The Jews refer to Gentiles as dogs. So, the thing that puzzles some people is this. Was Jesus saying this lady was a dog? And she's coming to him with a very heartfelt need. My daughter's demon-possessed. And he says, we're not giving it to a dog. Others have the idea that there were dogs that were, some dogs that were known to scrape up scraps, and that may be what's being talked about here. But either way you look at it, I want you to notice this. Every time Jesus answered her, first of all, when he didn't answer her, then when he said, I was not sent except to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, then when he said, it's not good to take the children's bread and throw it to the dog, none of those discouraged her. And he may have been testing her faith to see if she also was honoring him with her lips, but her heart was far from him. Her heart was not far from him. Her heart may have been in a better place than those back in Matthew 15:8. Notice relief did not come right away. You know, sometimes our faith tells us, by the way, let me just insert this, and I'll mention it again at the end of the lesson. Sometimes our faith is in our faith. It's not in God. Oh, initially, yes, faith comes by hearing, and hearing by the Word of God. But if our faith is in our faith, what happens when difficulty comes? This woman's faith was not in her faith. Her faith was in Jesus. Our faith is to be in God. He can do all things. I should not have faith in my own faith because my faith is going to be tested. I'm going to be tried. Blessed is the man that endures temptation, for when he's tried, he'll receive a crown of life, James said. But it's going to happen. So my faith can't be in my faith. And sometimes when we pray to God for something, relief does not come right away. And we say, God didn't hear me. If I say that, is my faith in my faith, or is my faith in God? I've often thought about Joseph. You remember all the things happened to Joseph? I know this is a sidebar. I'm kind of going everywhere preaching the word. Kind of a sidebar, maybe. You know the story of Joseph. sold into slavery by his brothers, father given the coat of many colors and told he was dead. Down there in Egypt, and Potiphar's wife made advances to him, thrown in prison, and then 22 years later, he gets in a position where his brothers come to Egypt to get grain. And he puts him through a test, and finally he realizes who he is. And in Genesis 50, verse 20, he said, "You meant it for evil, but God meant it for good." And I've often thought, I wonder how far along that route that Joseph took. When did he realize that? Was it when he was thrown in prison? Did he realize that when his brothers sold him into slavery? Or did he realize it when his brothers finally came back? And he made that statement. I don't know. But what I'm saying is, sometimes relief doesn't come right away. Sometimes God doesn't work, not sometimes, all the time. God does not work on our timetable or according to our clock. And the response usually came when someone came and wanted some help, almost immediately from Jesus. This time, he answered her not a word. Try to put yourself in her shoes. You would be left up in the air. You wouldn't know what's going on. You'd think, okay, is he going to say anything? Is he going to do anything? What about this? The disciples were the same ones who, by the way, and I found this interesting as I was studying this text, back in Matthew chapter 8, they're the same ones that were out on the Sea of Galilee, and the wind started coming up, and Jesus was asleep in the boat, and they suddenly became afraid and wondered why Jesus was sleeping. And he said this, here's rating of faith again, "Oh, you of little faith." Doesn't it strike you as interesting, it does me, that the very ones who had little faith are questioning this woman and saying, "Send her away." I wonder how they felt when Jesus finally said, "Oh, she's got great faith." If our chronology of events here are accurate, and I think chapter 8 took place before chapter 15, I just can't help but wonder, I wonder what that felt like to them. You know, not too long before that, he was saying they had little faith, and here's this woman who's from a wicked city, from an area that the Jews did not like, a Gentile who they despised, and she's called one of great faith. By the way, the book of Matthew was written, as I said, to Jews, but the events took place about AD 30, obviously a little time before the church was established. The book of Matthew was written in about AD, depends on the date, about AD 60, 62, something like that. So 30 years after the day of Pentecost, the church already, in a lot of places, Matthew was written. In the early church, there were Jews and Gentiles. As a matter of fact, if you read the book of Romans, you can see some of the problems in the book of Romans between the Jews and the Gentiles and the interaction between the two. And the Jews could not even associate with Gentiles, had not wanted nothing to do with them, could not, in our vernacular today, couldn't have a fellowship meal with them, couldn't associate it with them, and yet now they're in the church. So I happen to think, I wonder what this meant to the early church who might have read this or had it in AD 60 and looked at it, and here's this Gentile woman and one of great faith. But the disciples were the same ones. The disciples criticizing her are the same ones that had little faith earlier. Again, they may have wanted to send her away for a variety of reasons. They just didn't want to be bothered, perhaps. Perhaps because she was, her worship was wrong and she was a pagan worshiper, although you wonder about that if she calls Jesus Lord and identifies him as Son of David. Perhaps when Paul was on a missionary journey up in Phoenicia, maybe she got the message. But Jesus was silent. Most of our brotherhood commentaries that I've looked at say he was testing her. The test. And again, it may have been a test because the Pharisees honored him with their lips, but their hearts were far from him. That could have been the test. And again, Jesus used the term dogs. But I want you to notice her response. Whatever it was that Jesus said in verse 26, whether or not he was actually using the term for the Gentiles, many, if not most, of the Bible commentaries that I looked at said, yes, that's what he was doing. Others say, no, that something else. By the way, I'm going to show something from Tom Waycaster later on. Brother Waycaster says it has to do with little puppies or little dogs. But anyway, whatever Jesus meant by verse 26, she didn't deter her. So she said almost instantly, well, even the little dogs eat crumbs that fall at their master's table. Notice the word masters in verse 27. See where the apostrophe is? It's after the S, isn't it? She's saying something here about authority. She's saying something about recognizing something about who the master is. And so I find it interesting that she says, even these little dogs will eat the crumbs. Very humble attitude. That even they'll eat the crumbs that fall from their master's, plural, table. Very humble lady. So whatever it was that Jesus was saying, whether or not he was just talking about some dogs that were scavengers and using that illustration, or whether or not he was talking about the Jews or the Gentiles as dogs, either way, her response is significant. And so Jesus provides an excellent example of persistent faith on the part of this woman. Oh woman, great is your faith. Let it be as you desire. Now, in Mark's account, Mark says, when she had come to her house, Mark 7:30, she found the demon gone out and her daughter lying on the bed, just as she had hoped. But notice, she had come to her house. By the way, I want you to notice some comings and goings in this text. In verse 21, Jesus went to the region of Tyre and Sidon, and the woman came from that region to him. Her pressing need drove her to keep asking Jesus. By the way, in verse 25, she came and she worshiped him, saying, Lord, help me. Do you see the progression? She calls him Lord, Son of David. Then she says, Lord, help me. Now she's worshiping him. There's two Greek words for worship. One is proskuneo, and the other is latreo. Latreo is worship service. As a matter of fact, Romans 12, verse 2, depending on your translation, may say, which is your reasonable service, or may, New King James says, which is your reasonable worship. That's that word latreo. And all worship is service, but not all service is worship. But proskuneo has a very distinctive meaning. It means to bow yourself down, to humble yourself, to pay adoration to. Again, this woman is unlike the Jews to whom Jesus was talking. You remember John 4? Those that worship the Father must worship, that's the word proskuneo, must worship Him in spirit and in truth. This woman bowed down to Jesus. The progression of her faith is seen. Let me ask you just a minute. I asked a question earlier. What's your faith like? Has your faith progressed since you were baptized? Have you been baptized into Christ? Has your faith progressed? How far has it progressed? Are you in the same level you were when you were baptized? You know, Peter says you have to add to your faith. And if you don't, you've forgotten that you were saved, basically. And so, her faith, as the text unfolds, seemed to increase from Lord, Son of David, to Lord, help me. By the way, she starts out by saying, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. And then now she's worshiping him. So her persistence was met, again, when Jesus said, it's not meet to take the children's bread and cast it to the dogs, or Gentiles, which is the ordinary way. Some people, again, consider that to be what Jesus is saying. And her reward, her bold faith exhibited three ascending degrees of true faith. The trial of her faith consisted of silence. The trial resulted in the commendation of having great faith. And her faith prevailed. One, I'm not even halfway done. Okay. You know what? This is kind of like when you get Thanksgiving dinner at Grandma's house. She lays all this stuff out in front of you. She didn't expect you to eat everything. I'm laying a whole bunch of stuff out. Whatever you can get, and hopefully it does you good. This is the victory that overcomes the world, our faith. Jesus described her faith as great faith. And again, let me emphasize, the faith is not in my faith, but in God. The second example of Matthew's account of someone being healed from a distance. Also, the second time one's described as great faith, the other one's the centurion. Wayne Jackson says this, what a woman! She was reverent, quick-thinking, confident in faith, persevering. May her tribe increase, Brother Jackson says. I thought that was a good comment. Now get ready, I'm going to go through the rest of this real fast. Did you get all that? Okay. She had faith in Jesus, not in her own faith. I already said that. There's a difference between believing Jesus and believing in Jesus. A few years ago, my mind just went blank. Lockhart. Jay, thank you. Jay Lockhart said one time, he gave this illustration. If you go to the doctor and the doctor says, you have a cancer and it needs to be removed. You say, I believe you, doc. And you go out of the office. And then you go to some other doctor and have him take the cancer out. Brother Lockhart said, but if you believe in that doctor, you'll say, I believe you, doc, and I want you to remove the cancer. I thought that was a good illustration. Some people believe Jesus. As a matter of fact, James 2:19 says the demons even believe and tremble. But to believe in Jesus is a different story. Notice John 2:11, the beginning of signs Jesus did in Cana of Galilee and manifested his glory, and his disciples believed in him. They didn't just believe him, they believed in him. And in Galatians 2:16. Tom Waycaster teaches at the Memphis School of Preaching. I've got two of his commentaries on Matthew, excellent commentaries. He summarizes some of this by saying this. She took the effort to come to Jesus. She recognized the power of Jesus to accomplish her desire. She was persistent, refusing to take no for an answer. She worshiped Jesus. And then he says she was willing to take a place of low esteem, even as a little puppy dog, although it just says little dog in our text, under a table receiving only the scraps that fell from the table. So, what about us? Do we have a persistent faith? My hope is built on nothing less than Jesus' blood and righteousness. I dare not trust my sweetest frame, but wholly lean on Jesus' name. On Christ, the solid rock, I stand. All other ground is sinking sand. How's my faith? Jesus used the illustration, you remember, of a wise man built his house on the rock and a wise man that built his house on the sand. What happened when the storms came? One house fell and the other house stood. So some lessons we can learn. It illustrates the way in which God often deals with men. God has his way, and sometimes we go to him with our faith, trusting in our own faith. He's going to hold up two fingers now. Yep, there it is. Prayer and persistence in faith will go a long way. One of the persistent word in the New Testament is supplication. With prayer and supplication, let your requests be made known to God. You keep asking. You keep wanting God to do something. Don't give up the first time you pray something. And the prayer of the faithful will always be rewarded. The answer may be yes, the answer may be no, or it may be wait a while. For this lady, a Canaanite, didn't have the right connection with the house of Israel. A woman, a Gentile, great was her faith. Thank God for this example of this great woman that we can learn so much about, being bold in our faith. Hopefully, we've said something tonight that will help your faith to increase wherever it is. That will, even if you already have great faith,